702 on 92.7 and 106 FM. Streaming on 702.co.za, the 702 app, and on DSTV channel 856.
8 minutes after 12. Dumelang, good afternoon, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Xolani Gwala Show on 702 and Cape Talk for the Curious. My name is Clement Manyatela, with you until 1 p.m., bringing you up to speed with all the important news you need to know about. We love hearing from you, so you're welcome to join the conversation on 011-883-0702 in Cape Town, 021-446-0567. You can also send us your short WhatsApp voice messages to 072-702-1702. On SMS, we on 31702 and 31567. And you can also find me on Twitter at The Real Clement M. Coming up, reaction from Labour, government and business on the appointment of Andre De Reiter as Eskom CEO. So much to unpack here. I mean, will he be allowed the independence he needs to turn things around at the power utility? Is this appointment a setback on transformation? Will he get the support from the unions, or is he simply set up to fail? All of this in the first half hour of the show. Also, government is finally rising to the occasion. It's now intervened in this crippling SAA strike. Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan is currently meeting with unions in this hour. Will that meeting bring the strike to an end? That's the question right now, but we'll get you the latest in the second half hour of the show. Plus, how is that 25 years into democracy, our official languages are still not being accorded the same rights and treatment? And how do you fix that? The conversation is coming up. All of this and more on the show this afternoon.
Connect. Engage. Change. This is 702. This is 702. For the Curious.
What do you make of this new appointment, Andre De Reiter as the new Eskom CEO? I know there's been so much talk about transformation so far, and whether this appointment is a setback on transformation. I mean, Eskom is in a serious crisis. I'm sure we'll all agree on that. It needs a captain to steer it through these muddy waters. So should pigmentation matter? Or should we care about whether or not the person is qualified and equipped for the task? Let me use the analogy by the DA's interim leader, John Steenhuisen. He said South Africa is ill and the race of the doctor no longer matters. Should the race of this doctor that will attempt to cure Eskom matter? I also want to ask you this question, because some people have said Eskom is on the brink of collapse and, you know, this is not the time to have a conversation about transformation. We're in a desperate situation. But are we not in danger of entrenching the status quo? And like I asked on Twitter yesterday, can you even park transformation? Can you say to the Springboks, hold off on transformation? We have this World Cup in Japan that we need to win. Let's focus on training. We'll get back to that later. I mean, Andre De Reiter went through the recruitment processes, right? He emerged as the best candidate, we are told. So there's not much government can do about his race. But there are other people who will hold a different view and say, we should be deliberate in our transformation agenda, which in this case would mean that you go out of your way to find a black executive equally qualified to do the job, because there are many of them out there, no doubt. I want to hear what your thoughts are. Give me a call on 011-883-0702 in Cape Town, 021-446-0567.
702 for the Curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
12 minutes after 12, after a four-month search, Eskom, as I said earlier, has announced Nampak's Andre De Reiter as its new CEO. To mixed reactions, De Reiter takes over from Jabu Mabuza, who has been acting CEO since the sudden departure of Phakamani Khadebe at the end of July. So let's start our coverage of reaction to this appointment with the Department of Public Enterprises. Khotatso Tlakudi is the acting director general at the Department of Public Enterprises. Thank you so much for your time, Mr. Tlakudi. I really appreciate it. Finally, Eskom has this permanent CEO. As a shareholder, what are you expecting from him?
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for having me on your show. It is Khatatso, so not Khatatso.
Apologies, Khatatso.
Yeah. We are expecting Mr. De Reiter to lead the effort to reposition Eskom and ensure we have a sustainable business that is able to take care of itself financially, and hopefully not so long a future is able to contribute to the fiscus through dividends. In that regard, we have put together, as you are a minister, I think it was on the 9th of October, released the roadmap for the repositioning of Eskom, as well as obviously the rest of the electricity supply industry. Eskom is obviously a very significant portion of that particular industry.
Yeah.
So, I must say that he will not be working alone, Mr. DeRader. There's a team of capable executives at Eskom at the group level, as well as at power station level, whom he is expected to work with to deliver on this particular mandate.
And, you know, there have been so many claims, Mr. Tlakudi, of political interference coming from government by some board members. How much leeway will you as government give this new CEO to implement measures to turn around the state-owned entity?
Well, the statements on interference are rather unfortunate. Because as government, there is a particular mandate that we are expected to deliver on. There are particular imperatives that we expect the SOCs to deliver on. And we capture this in shareholder compact that we enter into with the SOCs. Mm. And if SOEs are moving in the wrong direction, as a custodian of people's assets, we have a responsibility to step in and ensure that these entities do the right thing as per the performance agreement. Yeah. Now, with regard to this particular, there's not been any interference. We've not said to the board who they should appoint. They've come to us after having undertaken a recruitment and selection process. They came through with three candidates to government. They said, we have a preference. It is Mr. DeRader. And we went through our own internal processes within government. Yeah. Out of those particular processes we detailed in the first statement we released yesterday, there was concurrence with the board in terms of their preferred candidate.
So if he decides... Sorry, Mr. Tlakudi. If he decides that as part of turning around this institution is to deal with the bloated staff at the entity by retrenching workers, what then? Would that be the wrong direction and a signal to government that it must intervene?
Well, in our engagements with the SOCs, we have said, can we look at other cost items? When you have exhausted those, then we can start talking about people. That's what you have said. And in Eskom, the biggest cost item is primary energy. And that is still the message that we're sending across to the SOCs. Let's look at those particular items. Let's not be seen to be insensitive to the fact that we have a high unemployment in our country. There are families behind the names of those people that are hired in this particular entity. Let that be the last resort. And if an SOE comes through to us and says, we have done all that you have asked us to do, we have much but to look into this. So, of course, engage with your organized labor and see what you can achieve there. But that cannot be a default. We cannot operate like we are insensitive to the socioeconomic challenges that our people are going through at this particular moment. We will be an uncaring government here to behave in that way. Mm. People are not dispensable. You know, they are not commodities.
Yeah,
these are people's lives that you're talking about here.
There's criticism that his appointment is a setback on transformation. This is a view of several unions. What do you say as government?
Well, it's an unfortunate view because we have to start looking at these appointments in totality. We have to say, what is the makeup of the executive team that we have in this particular entity? As you'll appreciate, the CEO does not work alone. And in any case, we also have to be objective when we say these things. Can we look at all the schedule to entities, the commercial entities, the large entities, for instance, and say, what is the demographic makeup of those particular entities? We look at those that we have in direct control of. Out of the seven of them, we have two of them which have white males that are heading them. Mm. But, and our view, I mean, it shows that we have not departed from the commitment we have made to address the imbalances that we inherited in 1994. We are continuing to ensure that opportunities at the highest levels in these commercial entities are made available to historically disadvantaged people.
All right.
And whether you're looking at executive level, whether you're looking at technical level, we continue to ensure that our people are employed in those roles across their spectrum.
Khataso Tlakudi, thank you so much for chatting to us. He's the acting DG of Public Enterprises. And listening to that conversation is the NUM president, Joseph Muntisetsi. Mr. Muntisetsi, thank you so much for chatting to us. Government there saying this is not necessarily a setback on transformation, that it's not departed from its commitment of addressing the imbalances that were brought about by that ruthless system. How have you reacted to the appointment of André de Ruyter?
Well, I was listening to him, and when he said he's not a setback, I asked myself, what did he mean? Because he appointed a white man. And for that reason, that white man is not even from Eskom. He had no knowledge at all about the workings of Eskom. He is coming from outside Eskom.
Yeah.
There are some black engineers who had been with Eskom for a very, very long time. Well, of course, if they were looking for qualifications like LLB and the business administration that this man has, I don't think any black hasn't have such qualifications.
So do you reject this appointment?
We reject this appointment because it is based on a setback. And again, the man got no really knowledge and understanding of Eskom. Eskom at this conjuncture needs someone who had been part and parcel of it and has a record of service in Eskom whereby credentials can be proved that he can turn this entity around.
Mr. Muntisetsi, should I read that as André de Ruyter won't be getting any support from the majority union NUM at Eskom?
Well, of course, it is true. If he can stop unbundling, let me be very, very clear. If he can stop unbundling, then we will find a way to work with him. Because interference of politicians at Eskom comes with unbundling. But if he is going to pronounce now to say that he stopped this unbundling and is going to start from a new slate and have consultation with trade unions, we will go and listen to him. And if he talks sense, then we will start to work with him.
Mr. Muntisetsi, I mean, you've mentioned the issue of race there. You say this is a white man that's been appointed. It is a setback, you argue. But should race really matter here, or the qualities and even the ability to do the job? I mean, some people may argue that he went through the recruitment processes like many other people and emerged as the best. So would you rather have the board pick someone who is less qualified for the job but black?
Well, the race matters. We're coming from a history whereby black people were marginalized and are still marginalized. If you look into the bigger companies in this country, you will agree with me that black people are still few who hold strategic positions. Even those who are supposed to be in positions of power, they still have no that power they consult.
All right.
So it is important for us that even within government itself, it must show private sector that transformation is an issue of importance. But we are not saying an unqualified black must be appointed.
All right.
I can't think that across South Africa, there is no qualified black.
All right. Joseph Muntisetsi, NUM president, thank you so much for chatting to us. Do you agree with him? Do you agree with the acting DG at the Public Enterprises Department? Or are you one of those people who say we have to be deliberate with that transformation? Go out of your way to find that black executive because, I mean, I think it would be very naive of us to also argue that there is no equally qualified black executive who could actually do the job. We'll take your thoughts. 011-883-0702 in Cape Town, 021-446-0567. 23 minutes after 12.
702. WhatsApp us now on 072-702-1702.
Hi, Clement. This is Seruela Tsutsumane. Clement, Brian Molefe was touted as the best thing that has ever happened to black professionalism. But look, what happened? It's quite the opposite. The guy was corrupt. Still is. You know? As far as I'm concerned, the color of the skin of the person, as long as he's professional, his track record speaks for him. Thank you.
So here's the thing. And I wonder what you make of this. So because we've had a few corrupt, rotten apples in the past, does that now define black leadership at any even utility? Huh? Because that's just basically what I'm trying to understand. Because now we're using Brian Molefe almost as this figure that represents black leadership just because he failed. Some people may argue he was corrupt. He mismanaged the funds at the power utility. But does that define then what black leadership is? Let's take this conversation forward with Matlala Setlalogile, who is the political analyst. Matlala, good afternoon to you. I was looking at your commentary yesterday on social media, and you seem to dismiss some of the people that argue that this is a setback on transformation, this appointment of Andre de Ruyter as the new Eskom CEO. Why do you believe this appointment is actually meant to transform Eskom?
Afternoon, Clement, and afternoon to your listeners. Clement, I think the starting point should be looking at what is the ultimate goal of transformation. I think the ultimate goal of transformation is to ensure that black people and black South Africans and ultimately Africans participate meaningfully into the economy.
Yeah.
That is the ultimate goal of transformation. Now, how do we ensure that the strategic assets that the state has serve their objective, the developmental objective, to ensure that the economy works for South Africans? We need to get them to be functional, first and foremost.
Yeah.
Remember, putting Africans and black people in general into strategic roles is a very important aspect of transformation. But should we look at transformation from that narrow sense? Shouldn't we look at putting black people into strategic roles as a means to an end? It's not an end itself. Secondly, there's a subtle undertone that has been, persistent for a while. It seems some sectors in South Africa want to ghettoize white people to say that they're no longer relevant. We don't need that contribution in society.
Yeah.
I think that some of the tacit messages coming out. Transformation is very important.
Sorry for coming there. We're just running out of time, but I wanted to also put in this question of Matlala. I mean, a lot of people have been asking, what was he thinking applying for this job? I mean, he now has that big responsibility of stabilizing the almost half a trillion rand debt. You know, he must oversee the restructuring of the power utility. He must balance the interests of workers versus what needs to be done to make Eskom work. Already, NUM has come out and said, we reject this appointment. They are suggesting that they won't work with him unless he stops the restructuring of this power utility. What should be his top priorities? What does he need to do first?
Look, I think stakeholder engagement, facilitating a very positive stakeholder engagement climate, the different stakeholders, that should be his first priority to ensure that he's got the employees of Eskom on board, he's got the labor unions on board, and ultimately the confidence of South Africans. That is his first priority before he even starts doing anything. You need to get support from all relevant stakeholders before moving forward.
All right. Listen, thank you so much for speaking to us. Matlala Sitlalogile is a political economist. And coming up in the second half hour of the show, we'll talk about the latest coming out of that meeting between the Public Enterprises Minister, Pravin Gordhan, and some of those unions representing workers at SAA. But we're also going to have a conversation about our official languages. 25 years into democracy, are they all being accorded the same rights and treatment? It's just after 12:30.
WhatsApp us now on 072-702-1702.
Good afternoon, Clement. Yes, there are black executives who are equally qualified, some even more qualified than Andre to do the job. But however, how many black executives have we had at Eskom in the past 10 years who just keep looting the company or letting their friends or other people come in and do as they please at Eskom, letting the unions do as they please at Eskom? Now we need a new broom that will sweep clean and will make sure that power is kept on.
Yeah, and that new broom is going to need all the support, right? Because you're taking over this giant of Eskom with all its multiple challenges. And I think you're going to also need the support of the unions as well. And it's just so sad to see also the NUM coming out and writing off Andre De Reiter just on the basis that he's actually white. So it doesn't look like they will be supporting him at all. In fact, the condition is that he has to stop the unbundling at Eskom if he wants that support from the majority union. Let's go to the lines now on 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. Pumlani in Lyndhurst, what do you want to say?
Good day to you, Clement, and to your listeners.
Sure.
I will not write him off on the basis of his race. No. I will write him off or on, if there is such a term, on the basis of his success, his previous success. At NAMPAC, what is his success? Deliberate success in transformation. What did he do? How much of transformation did he contribute at NAMPAC? Mm. NAMPAC didn't move an inch in the PEE ratings at NAMPAC while he was on rain. He invested billions of rands in the USA, a stable economy already. Yes, he may have been seeking returns for the shareholders, but now my question then would be, was there not enough opportunities within South Africa or Africa as a whole?
Mm.
Lastly, his dismal failure to get into a political tough environment in Nigeria. And now he must be excused because Nigeria is not the easiest terrain to work in politics. And CEOs paid to work in tough terrain. It's like saying having a big 4x4 car and it's struggling to drive into the mud, and then the excuse is, no, that's a difficult terrain to drive into.
Mm.
That is what CEOs are supposed to drive in those terrains.
All right.
That's my opinion about him.
Pumlani, thank you so much for sharing your opinion with us. Pumlani in Lyndhurst. Bruce in Renbank, hi.
Yeah, Dominic. Look, it's a very important question, and what you're seeing at Eskimo is synonymous with what we've seen through the years. To answer it, though, it's not that you don't have black executives, but most of them are in the private sector. The truth is no one actually wants to take over these jobs, because it's not that the jobs can't be done. The reality is, and we're seeing it at SAA, they'll do these restructures, which they have to, but there is, and this is inevitable, going to be retrenchment. Now, the retrenchments have to happen. We don't really have a choice. Now, but when they do start happening, what the trade unions will do is they are going to push back.
Yeah.
Now, funnily enough, it'll be much harder for a black executive at that point, because he will be sell out. You'll see, they'll actually make it worse for him. So this guy that's taking the job over, it's actually better than the white person, because either way, the board are going to be attacked and criticized, but it has to happen. But if someone's going to have to do it, rather let a white person do it, because the trade unions don't like him anyway. But the real thing here is it has to happen. Only government can block it.
Mm.
And unfortunately, we're in a situation where if you say no retrenchment, you know, we've been trying this for years, and that's over now. So he can do it. He will need. He's not going to get the support of the trade union. Though, I'm telling you right now that those days that ship sailed. But the government doesn't need the trade unions to do it, because if you look around the world, this sometimes happens where you have to address the problem, and then it eventually comes to an end.
Right.
But yes, end of the day, it's got to be done. Government has to support them because government can block it. But there is going to be, we're going to be a degree of retrenchment. But unfortunately, we don't have a choice.
Yeah, Bruce and Renbeng, thank you so much for that view. And the question is government going to offer that support? Nevare in Bombela, hi.
Hi, how are you, my brother?
Great, how's it?
You know, I'm certainly, and I've been campaigning for the rest of my life for African leadership. But you see, it can't be at all costs, you know, because you see, Eskom is at the brink of collapse. The debt of Eskom is almost, you know, 2/3 of the GDP of this country. And we're sitting here, we're discussing, you know, colors, you know, semantics. And South Africans are just people who speak too much without action. And I don't think we'll ever go anywhere. If you listen to the union and their condition, it's nonsense. They're not saying anything about the future of this country.
Mm.
I don't think that must be debating race on the night. I mean, even when you go to the topography of the entire institutions of the state, you find that blacks are dominant. So are we saying we must drive all the whites to the sea? I don't think that's correct. I mean, the analogy is quite very fictitious to me.
Well, Navari, what do you say to another argument if someone would come forward and say, well, I agree with you that the blacks are dominant in most of, let's say, public departments, for example, but they're dominant at lower and middle management level. If you look at the stats by Stats SA or even the Labour Department's research, it will show you that over 60% of top management is still occupied by white males. So the argument would be, yeah, they dominate, but in very much lower levels. And the problem is there at the top.
I really don't think that could actually be correct. Let me talk from the state perspective. How many DGs run government departments today? How many whites are there?
Mm.
How many municipal managers of all municipalities, by the way, have collapsed in our country? Those are black executives. We must speak about our own competence as blacks.
Mm.
We must speak about delivering service to our people. This thing of transmission at all costs can't work.
Yeah.
Because our people need to be voted. The government needs to be voted in. People need electricity.
Mm.
We must say, on the basis of what we're doing now, how much have we committed ourselves as a national important aspect of building a competent, but also people with moral and ethics
to
run our institutions?
Yeah,
we're not talking about those things. We're sidetracked by small things that are quite very nonsensical to me.
Yeah.
And I think that we must give this chap a chance to run. If he failed, then we can say he has failed, like any other African, but he wants to contribute like any other person.
Yeah, and the sad thing is, Nevare, if he fails, the entire country fails, and we're going to feel the pinch. Because the economy is going to be, you know, the first to actually feel that pinch, and that's not going to bode well. Nevare calling us from Bombela, thank you so much for your input. It's now 15 minutes before 1 o'clock.
702 for the curious. Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
All right, let's go to the State Capture Commission now, where Reverend Frank Chikane is on the stand. He's a former Director General in the presidency. That was during President Thabo Mbeki's tenure. EWN reporter Barry Bateman is tracking that inquiry for us. Barry, good afternoon to you. So what's he telling the commission today?
Yeah, good afternoon, Clement. Well, the Reverend has just wrapped up. We're moving on to the next witness. So it was quite a short day for the Reverend. But what he was essentially called here today to do was to corroborate the evidence that had been provided by the former government spokesperson and Director General of GCIS, Themba Maseko. Now, you will have recalled that Maseko had previously testified at the commission that he was instructed by former President Jacob Zuma to meet with the Gupta family and to ensure that they get a share of government advertising spend. Now, what Chikane has told us today is that Themba Maseko came to him, and this was after his time in government. He had served under Thabo Mbeki and then Kgalema Motlanthe, and he had by this time left government. But he said a lot of other directors general and people in government would come and confide with him and seek his advice as somebody who had been in government at that time for quite some time. He said that Themba Maseko had asked him, or had told him, listen, President Zuma has instructed me to go and meet with these Guptas. What should I do? Well, he says, he told Maseko that, well, you don't have any reason not to at the moment. Go to the meeting, see what it's about, and take it from there. He says not long after that, Maseko returned to him and said, listen, I have now been told that I should engage in conduct which is irregular. It is unlawful. And he explained how it had to do with its advertising revenue. It was on this basis, said the Reverend, that he advised Maseko that on this basis, you can reject this instruction that has been given to you by the president. It is unlawful, it is irregular, and we now know that it was based on that particular advice that Thabo Mokgosi was essentially fired from his job. The Reverend went on to speak broadly about state capture and corruption in South Africa and lamenting the state of the public service and the way corruption has crept into these organizations. Also talking about how there's a younger generation of South Africans who can't quite value the effort and the sacrifices that were made during the struggle to attain this freedom in South Africa.
Who's next on the stand at the commission today?
Well, next up, Clement, we've got Lieutenant General Yulisa Matakata. She's the former acting head of the Hawks. Now, you'll remember she took over after burning in Tlemeza. We're not too sure what she's going to be telling us. We've just heard before we went into the break after Frank Chikane that it will be a very short witness. So it's perhaps to come and corroborate some of the other information we've heard.
All right, listen, thank you so much for chatting to us. EWN reporter Barry Bateman. 12 minutes before...
Coming up...
The Azania Moussaka Show on 702.
Know, live, transform.
This is 702.
For the curious.
Hi, Clement. It's Mthethelele here from Protea Glen. I wonder where's all the professional bodies of these black executives? Because whenever government selects these people that have shamed us and stolen money, they should have had a list of people that they could recommend and say they are the people that they trust would do the job. And then we can draw parallels from that.
702. SMS us now
on 31702.
9 minutes before 1 o'clock, we're trying to get a hold of the guest that we have confirmed from the CRL Commission to chat to us about 25 years into democracy, whether all the 11 official languages that we have are still accorded the same rights and treatment. Because it raises the question, right, with such realities where some languages are neglected, marginalized, and they are not treated equally, can multilingualism and even social cohesion be realized in this country? And that's the question that we'll be asking the professor in a short while. But we'll also have a conversation about protests that are taking place globally today. And they seem to be protests. And we'll speak to an organization in South Africa because they're protesting in defense and affirmation of the right to protest, not only in South Africa, but across the globe. And some of the concerns they have is that peaceful protests are labeled as illegal, and that's one of the things that they want to challenge. We'll speak to them in a short while, but let's look at this story now, what I told you earlier about the 11 official languages that we have and whether or not they're still accorded the same rights and treatment. Well, the Commission for the Promotion and Protection of the Rights of Cultural, Religious and Linguistic Communities is hosting hearings that will hopefully, assist in turning the situation around. Let's chat to Professor David Mosoma, who is the chairperson of the CRL Commission. Prof, good afternoon to you. When are you starting with the hearings?
We have already started this morning. We are in the process now. We started with the Department of Arts and Culture, National, and now we are busy with the provinces.
Yeah, and I know you have already looked at some reports from people working in this space. What do they attribute this neglect of some official languages to?
Well, the reports we have received now are an indication of the fact that the issue of language has not been taken seriously, especially the implementation thereof.
Mm.
The Constitution provides that the 12 languages or 11 languages must be given same status, equal status, equal esteem and treatment. But this is not the case, because when we are digging deep to find out whether the departments actually have policies, they do have policies, but are they making people aware about the fact that they can make choices with regard to the language they can use?
Mm.
For example, if they want to apply for a job, the advert is advert in languages to the application forms, the communication system, and all of that. Because we think that for the language to flourish and develop, it must be used. If it's not, it becomes a relic of history.
Mm.
So departments must give effect to both the Act and the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa.
And we know that's not necessarily the case in many of the departments, which brings me to this question on whether there are measures that are being put in place, Prof, to monitor and regulate this use of official languages where necessary, especially at government departments where regulations and even the mandate requires that they do.
Yes, indeed. The mandate, the constitution requires that they do. But unfortunately, I think for the past few years, that has not been the case. Some of them have the policies. But when it comes to the implementation aspect, that's where they are lagging behind. And also the ability to assess whether the public is satisfied with the access to languages in the department, that has not been done. Mm. And we're also requiring the implementation plan that they have. Some of them don't have, but at least we are raising that awareness that going forward, these are the things we'll be requiring of them to make sure that we give effect to the aspirations of the constitution of our country.
Mm. All right. Listen, thank you so much for chatting to us. Prof. David Mosomo, chairperson of the CRL Commission. They have started with these hearings and hopefully they will turn the situation around because it's really surprising that 25 years into democracy, you still even have government departments that are still struggling as their mandate require for them to make use and recognize other official languages with the same equal measure that they have on other languages. So we cannot still be talking about some of the languages not being accorded the same respect, rights, and treatment. 4 minutes before 1 o'clock.
702. SMS us now on 31702.
All right, I told you earlier about protests that are happening around the world today. So we'll focus on the one happening in the country. Dali Weyers is the head of policy and research at the Social Justice Coalition. Dali, good afternoon to you. So speak to us about why you are protesting, because I see in your statement, or is it even a letter that is intended for the president, you argue that there must be a defense and affirmation of the right to protest in South Africa.
That's the reason why we are protesting, is essentially for the right to protest. Mm. So even though we've made major gains in democratic South Africa around freedom of assembly, yeah, freedom of expression, and so ultimately the right to protest, there are still instances where protest action is violently and in some instances lethally ended by the South African Police Service, by law enforcement officers, and in some instances by private security companies,
yeah,
in South Africa. So we had the instance earlier this year where two young men were shot and killed in Caledon in the Western Cape, for example. And there are countless other examples where the state is limiting that ability of its citizens and people living in the country to express themselves.
All right. Listen, thank you so much for that quick update. Dali Weyers, head of policy and research at the Social Justice Coalition, chatting to us about their protest today. They want this affirmation and defense of the right to protest in South Africa. And some of the concerns they have is that peaceful protests are often labeled as illegal, and that is a problem.